You have that green light, and you have the red light.
Green light.
And that's why people have compared it to the Squid Games.
Green light.
It's sick. It really is sick how it's been done. I've been to numerous war zones all over. I've never seen anything in my life. Never in my life have I ever seen anything like this. A young lad has been standing on the berm, messing around, 12 years old. It's insane what was done. It was straight up war crime. It's straight up murder. Everything that was done was by the IDF.
The massacres of Palestinians at aid sites across Gaza stands as one of the more gruesome and cruel episodes in the Gaza genocide. Today, we are joined by someone who witnessed some of these killings firsthand, Dave McIntosh, who was a site manager for a security firm contracted by the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. Dave, thanks for joining us here at Declassified.
No, thank you. It's a pleasure. I say a pleasure to be able to shed some light on what's happened over there and also give some clarity to maybe families affected.
Dave, you were in the British Army. You were Special Forces operative.
Royal Marines Commando for 7 years.
How did you find yourself in Gaza?
Good question. So after October 7th and the ongoing war crimes ensued, we all seen what happened. I won't beat around the bush, the genocide. So I felt compelled, not just as a former soldier, but as a human, to get out there and help. So since October the 7th, I wanted to get on the ground. I mean, about a year ago now, a friend came to me and said, oh, McIntosh, you're still looking to go to Gaza? I said, hell yeah, definitely. I didn't know what role. I wasn't sure on what role. I said, yes. And if there is malpractice going on, there's malpractice from GHF, I'll report it. Or the IDF, I'll expose it.
Okay, we're going to look at some of your footage now, Dave. Is this one taken from the site?
This is from Site 4, yeah.
So this is Site 4, yeah. Northern Gaza, the only GHF site for the whole of Northern Gaza, which is the most populated part of Gaza, just above the Nazarene Corridor.
Yeah.
What are we seeing here? That's a bank of Israeli soldiers separated by barbed wire.
So
talk me through this scene.
This is a daily occurrence on distros. So every time there's a distribution, they sit there with unlimited amounts of ammunition because they'll pose up there from about 4 a.m. till the end of distro, which is about after 12. And they will just sit there and take pot shots and just keep shooting. You'll have sniper fire, you'll have machine gun, you'll have tank rounds. You'll also have drones going overhead if they see someone at risk. There's no threat. They've got no weapons. We can see this. You don't need optics to tell you what's going on. I can only explain it as such as it's like a field day. A field day for them.
These are people that have been starved for 2 years. Desperate, and they're getting shot at.
The key word is desperate. And I'm thinking, first and foremost, why would you come out of the rubble to lie up there when you know you're going to get shot at by the IDF? Why would you do it? I'm not in their mindset. I'm not eating for days. I'm not witnessing starvation over there. It's unthinkable. I've been to war, but this is unthinkable. The desperation they must have to want to get that aid is crazy. The IDF know this. The IDF know this. So when people say it's a death trap, I'm like, well, you know, I guess it is.
Okay, let's move on to the aid and the aid distribution, how it worked out.
In the video there, I said, you will always hear gunfire. Now, once again, if I repeat myself, I've been to Afghanistan, I've been to Libya, I've been everywhere. I've been in active war zones. I've never heard as much gunfire and ordnance being dropped as I've seen over there. It's non-stop.
So this is you waiting ahead of the distribution.
Yeah. So I'm setting all the distro up, getting it all set up, making sure it's all there. And then we say, okay, when we're ready. And then it's the green light, the infamous green light.
Green light.
So you hear on the radio, green light.
Lord of mercy.
People aren't just walking fast, they're sprinting.
Sprinting. The time, they know that you only got an hour. Thus why it's no dawdling to the site. It's you either get there and you get that aid and you get out. There's no time to wait around. You have that green light and you have the red light. And that's why people have compared it to the Squid Games, that thing. And it makes sense because literally it's a living reality of that. They've curated that through the time limits, through how they set things up, through the green and red light. It really is sick how it's been done.
And you can hear the shots still going off in this one.
Yep. So what they do is, if anyone steps out of what they believe is a safe zone, where the people are running everywhere, they'll fire. Whether they'll fire at them, more time they'll fire overhead, fire at the feet. This is where a lot of the deaths happen, but they're firing.
This is GHF,
yeah? That'll be GHF, yeah, that's the UG. UG.
We've got a US flag on the back of his helmet.
So they're all US troops.
And now the people are going over the hill.
Getting there, that's it. And you can tell by the video, there's gonna be war there, because internal war, because there's not enough to feed even a fifth of that. Now, that's not alone gonna get to these people, they're gonna get back to the respective families. Aid isn't given daily, it's meant to be. We try, we have enough facilities, we have enough logisticals. We'll have it ready to go daily. And they'll stop us. This is why you get the mass stampedes. They'll stop us. Okay, you're not doing it today. For why? What reason? Oh, just can't do it. This is how they play with us. But most importantly, they play and antagonize Palestinian people. But they're sick.
And it's called a distribution site.
Yeah.
And when you think of the word distribution, you think, you know, a friendly NGO worker handing out by, you know, based on what people need, maybe, one per person.
Yeah.
This is not that at all.
It's not.
They're leaving it out there. You were not actually doing any distributing. We were just standing back and watching. There's a report you wrote on the 13th of September, and it has a breakdown of the timings.
Yeah.
A convoy arrives at SD at Site 4 at 7:49 a.m. Convoy departure 8:57. 1 minute later, distribution start 8:58, and then the site cleared 9:39. So that's
bloody hell.
41 minutes.
41 minutes for them to get there.
So hundreds, maybe thousands of
people. To run from there to get in and get it out. And that's crazy, because that's the window that the IDF kind of give us to distribute the aid. And let's be honest, that 1 hour time window is not because they have to move the troops elsewhere. It's because they want to just make a frenzy. You get in there, get out, and if you don't get out within that hour, then we'll open fire.
There's an organization called Forensic Architecture, and they looked at an average of all the amounts of time that GHF sites were open.
Yeah.
This was between May and July, so before you got there. And the average across all of them was 23 minutes was the average time it was open.
It's insane, yeah.
So as little as 10 minutes, some of them.
And we constantly be battling with the IDF. No, we need to do it longer. We need to do it. No, that's it. So there'll be big queues of people that have come for miles. And what they'll do is, even we've got loads of aid to keep handing, nope, time's up now.
Hello, guys. Woo, yes. Hello, hello, hello. All right.
So you've got these kids waving up.
Yeah. There's people and women and children that have queued up. What is so sad, they'll still have smiles on their faces, they'll be a bit angry, and they'll walk off and they'll come back next day. I'm like, how is that? You've gone for miles. Do you see we've still got food, but we can't give it to you? The IDF have said, no, time's up, we're leaving, you can't stay here anymore. It's mad. It's sickening to the core. But what stuck with me is the resilience and the love of the Palestinian kids and the women and the guys. They come here with smiles on their faces, not get aid, be shot at, all this stuff, and come back the next day. It's like, whoa, what must be going on out there that you could come here to this monstrosity and still have a smile on your face? How is that possible?
And there's videos and pictures that you posted of Palestinian kids, four, yeah. Five, 6 years
old. Oh my God.
And that's almost half their life.
A lot of them are orphans. Children that come, they come because they don't have a family. They have to come and brave it. And they don't come holding a parent's hand. No. They're coming on themselves. So more likely, they are orphans and they hang around and they get the food and they're just thinking, how are you smiling? And you know what's sad, actually? Because they were sad. The kids are going, we're singing God Save America. I'm like, the hell, you know, it's pretty, pretty sad. We're singing God Save America. Oh, cheering in America. I'm like, just because we're getting food and they're nice, they're so welcoming. It's not right. Yeah, it's not. Okay, so I work at Site 4, which is near the Nusrat camp. Okay, North Gaza. It's heavy activity, heavy bombing from the IDF. And we drive in through all this. As you can see, it's like a Terminator 2 judgment movie. It's apocalyptic. And what's crazy is, just from a bit of a military background, all this is rebar, heavy concrete. So these buildings aren't built from just a bit of concrete, this and that, a bit of brick. No, these buildings will stand up some heavy ordnance, some heavy bombing. So for them to look like that, they've been mulleted 3, 4, 5 times. It's just a pure act of, I want to demolish this area. And this is a small clip, but that goes on. The whole of Gaza is flattened. A few stand-up buildings, but those stand-up buildings have still been smashed.
So now you're filming.
Yep.
Probably on the way in or out.
This is on the way in.
It's on the way in. So this is early morning.
Early morning, yeah.
Just try and take yourself back to that moment when you're filming this. What are you thinking when you're seeing that?
You're driving into an apocalypse. And the funny thing is, I used to say to the lads, I said, imagine if you was just given a vision of this in the future. You'd think the world had been destroyed by nuclear weapons. You'd think there'd been a nuclear apocalypse. It's literally, I've been to numerous war zones all over. I've never seen anything in my life. Never in my life have I ever seen anything like this. Holy shit.
And so when you're here in Site 4,
yeah,
is this an active war zone? As in, this isn't one of the safe zones?
No, it's an active war zone. So this is a misconception as well, that the IDF work with us. We hate them. The amount of times they fired on us is insane.
The IDF is fucking crazy. Just literally had about fucking 40 rounds on a machine gun hit that sand berm there. Fucking, I don't know if the dog fucking died. It was splattered up everywhere.
Whether they're firing mortars next to our camp, or hitting it, or hitting inside our camp. And this isn't a one-off incident. This isn't a one-off where they shot the dog there, got on comms to the IDF battalion commander of the area. And he goes, oh, it wasn't us. I'm like, are you joking? It wasn't us. You're behind us, okay? We're trained soldiers. You know where the firing came from. You are the only people, because the area's cleared, who are behind us. Then it happens again. So they're having a laugh of us. They're joking. They're trying to antagonize us also.
The impression that I got
from
afar was that, you know, the IDF and the GHF were working hand in hand on this.
No, they didn't like us. They are the biggest threat to us, more than the supposed Hamas. The biggest threat.
Just assume. That's what I'm videoing.
And let's just, you know, let's go back to that site. And I think the day was the 25th of September.
Yep, 25th of September, yeah.
And, you know, I think from a distance, you probably witnessed quite a few deaths, but this was one that you witnessed up close. Yeah. So can you just talk?
Yeah, okay. So I have took the witness statements from two of my UG personnel. Okay. So I'm doing that. We'd finished distribution. I'm doing reports of what's happened. What happened was a young lad had been on the berm, probably 20 meters outside of camp. Okay, young boy. So I'll just paint the picture.
How old, roughly?
12 years old, okay. Everyone's cleared off. This is Cypher. Everyone's cleared off, apart from the people getting their medical aid. They go away. Then a young lad has been standing on the berm, messing around, 12 years old. Now, rules of engagement, once again, it's always, you know, you have steps. The guy's like, mate, come on. No, not so many terms. Go away. You need to go away. Why are you going to clear them off? Because if you don't move, you're going to get shot by the IDF. Okay. So he didn't move away. He's still joking around. 12 years old. He could have had any learning disabilities. We don't know. So they've thrown a smoke grenade next to him. Obviously, it's not lethal, smoke grenade, just to say, hey, come on, let's go.
So that was the security guys.
That's security, UG guys, okay.
Yeah.
Tried to get him away. And the IDF have a base 100 meters back. Then moments later, they've shot him, sniper rifle 7.62, to his shoulder. Okay, you're not surviving. You're not surviving that, especially a 12-year-old. He drops to the floor. Okay, He manages to get up. He gets to the bridge that you see in gets to the bridge. He collapses on the bridge. Then it's 30 minutes before they get to the young lad who's now clearly dead. 30 minutes, I'm not a doctor, but you've got a gunshot wound to the shoulder, 7.62. You've collapsed, 30 minutes, you bled out, okay? So then that's obviously taking him away. I don't know his name, don't know what happened.
Who took him away?
It would have been just some Palestinians, that's it.
So it was an ambulance?
No, it wasn't an ambulance. No. It's just a standard, took a salvage vehicle that they got, took him away.
Just have an idea, is it this site you're talking about? And was he in this area here?
Yeah. So he's around, so this is site 4, okay? He'll just be standing around there.
If you go back even further, you can see the bridge.
Yeah, exactly. So managed to get to the bridge. So you're talking 150 meters out.
He's gone from here to there.
Yeah, exactly.
There would have been other guys around that witnessed.
Yeah, so you have these, the most eyes on right here. You have other UG on the other side, but we have optics here. So we can fully see what's going on. The guys have reported it, fully seen what's going on through the optics.
Could the bullet have come from anywhere else?
No, it's only, listen, we're all well-trained. So all well-trained, like I said, all UG, special forces, everyone is well-trained. You know exactly where it's come from. You know, it's impossible. The only angle from the shot, the entry wound, the way he's fallen, it wasn't a UG guy. And it wasn't any Hamas who were that behind that role, because it's all cleared out by IDF. The only people behind us are the IDF.
And you said it was a 7.62?
7.62 was a sniper rifle.
Just tell me what sort of damage that can be.
Okay, well, 7.62, we're going to take your arm off. It's from that caliber of weapon, okay, the size of weapon, you're not going to survive that. You're not going to survive it whatsoever. For him to be able to get up and get over there is a testament to the resilience and strength these people have.
Especially a 12-year-old.
12-year-old, exactly that. It's like, well, that's it, fight or flight. He'd been hit. Get up, let me get to there. But obviously the wound's overcoming. He's collapsed and bled out.
So you think he would be dead?
Oh, you cannot possibly survive that. It's impossible. Shoot the chest, gunshot wound, 7.62, that close range, 30 minutes untreated, you've bled out 100%.
I mean, I tried to find something online.
Yeah.
All that I found was a news report from a Palestinian news organization, Quds Network, just saying on the 25th that a Palestinian had been shot at that aid site.
Oh, right. So there was something reported?
It was very brief details. No details of age or anything like that.
It's insane what was done. It was straight up war crime. And you'll see the report, it's straight up murder. So no one said, take the witness statements. But I know, take the witness statements. A murder has happened, take a witness statement. So I do a report. I fired up the chain, then I'm expecting to come back. Let's take the guys in for a full-on debrief and an interview. Nothing happened. Okay, I've reported a murder. Okay, of a young boy on site, nothing happened. Now hear me out here. It's like, and I sat and thought about this. I thought, well, what could actually be done? They go to the IDF, you killed a boy. We've not. Okay, well, we've got a report here. You got a video? No. Okay. Well, we're going to make it harder for you to even give aid if you carry this on. So it's all well and good saying, well, why didn't your hierarchy do something? Why didn't the ICC do something? Why hasn't Tipping Starmer done something? Why hasn't anyone else done anything? Because they're all, to a certain level, compromised. I'm not sticking up for GHF. No, they should have done something. They should have come back to me and said, get more reporting done on this. I would have liked that, but it didn't happen. But there you go. You've got one young lad there, lost his life. His parents don't know what's happening. Maybe he's got the date, the 25th of September. That was the time, site 4, hopefully, you know, that you can get back to them what had actually happened.
So, I mean, you kind of alluded to this before, but why are you speaking up now?
Yeah, well, there are two reasons. There's two reasons. One, due to what I witnessed before and what I was able to document, if I can expose these people and see more, as very flirt with the word, their malpractice, see more crimes, then I'll report that 100%. I'd rather be in there and be able to do it rather than it go amiss. That, but most importantly, why I'm doing it now, I just thought because it was going out the window, Palestine was getting forgot about. No matter how horrible the massacre is, something else comes in the media, people forget about it. I'm like, that crime's still going on. There's still children being murdered. But if it's not being reported about, it gets forgot about. So it was just important right within myself to expose the crimes, now. There's never a right time sometimes, but this was my right time.
You know, you've seen some of the comments on the videos that you put up. I mean, the fact stands that you were paid to be there.
Yeah. Yes.
And so people are saying, you know, you were profiting off the situation.
Yeah. You know what the funny thing is that I'm not doing this for a medal. I put my head above the parapet. I'm not looking for a round of applause. I really could not care less. I'm happy that I'm exposing and doing the work I asked God to put me in. Exposing them. And what people don't know, I won't get employed after this. I will not get employed. I'll be blacklisted within certain communities because I've gone against my NDA. Okay. I should not be talking about this, but I don't care. What's an NDA without a moral compass?
And you said you were shocked by what the IDF had done in Gaza. You were a Royal Marine Commando in Iraq?
Yeah, no, I did private security for the Americans over in Iraq, but I've been in Afghanistan for the British military.
So you're in Afghanistan as a Royal Marines Commando. Yeah. You know, there were war crimes committed by our own forces in Afghanistan.
Yeah, that's been documented, yeah.
Why is what's happening in Gaza so much more shocking than, you know, what happened in Afghanistan?
Okay, well, from being Royal Marines Commando 7 years, okay, Afghanistan, the Gulf, East Africa, Northern Ireland, we go off NATO standards of rules of engagement. It's embedded in me. You know, this is my life, going to different conflict zones, humanitarian aid, sometimes training military, okay? They don't even slightly go away from rules of engagement. They flaunt the rules. It is absolutely insane. And they class the Palestinians, they must class, well, I've heard it from the mouths, as animals, and certainly need to be able to do what they do.
And lastly, do you regret going there?
No, not at all. Not at all. You know, I witnessed what evil they did on television. I prayed to go over there and do help. I know I'm going to get chastised for this in the work region, in the military region. You know, the military region don't like this. You're exposing people for keep it secret bullshit. You know, I'm doing what a soldier and any human being should do. If you've seen crimes like this, not even close to this, expose the bastards. You expose them. That is the duty of a soldier and the duty of a decent human being. So I don't care about money. I don't care about further employment. I care about what I've seen and showing the people what's happened over there. And it's beyond revolting. It's beyond disgusting. So I'm damn glad I was over there.
Well, Dave, thank you for coming here and telling us about what happened on those sites. It really is a harrowing story. If you want to see more videos like this, please subscribe to our channel. Please like the video. Please donate if you're able to. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you on the next video.